In this section, I want to spend a little bit more time talking about endpoints, because in general, network communication is always brittle. And in a world where instances are on one node and then they move to another node, it becomes hard to track all of that and make sure that your applications are staying in sync with the location of the services you're trying to communicate with. On this slide, I want to walk through the steps necessary to have your service listen. Step number one. For an input endpoint, this is for traffic that's coming in from the public internet, you have to configure the load balancer to allow traffic over the desired ports. If the load balancer is not configured properly, then it will not allow the traffic in to your cluster, and so no instances of code running in your cluster can go and process those requests. Now, you may recall earlier in the course, I mentioned that Service Fabric has nothing to do with a load balancer. So, if you are using Microsoft Azure, then it will provide the load balancer for you. And the way you configure that load balancer is either by way of an ARM template, or you configure it by way of the portal. You don't use anything about Service Fabric like the cluster manifest to go and configure the load balancer. If you're using Service Fabric outside of Azure, then you just have to do whatever you need to do in order to have your load balancer work properly. Step number two, you need to add the desired endpoints to the service manifest XML file in the resources section. This is important because Service Fabric is going to ACL those ports on the node when it goes and deploys your service instance to a particular node. If Service Fabric doesn't know what ports you're opening up, it will not ACL them, and then your application won't be able to get any traffic on those ports. It won't be able to even create a listener on those ports. Usually it'll throw an exception and crash. So this has to be done as well. Make sure you specify the ports in the service manifest file. And then step number three. When Service Fabric starts your service instance or replica, you need to create the listeners that you're going to be listening for traffic on. So the way that you do that is you override that create service instance listeners method, which I just showed you in the previous section of this class. And then in your methods there, you're going to create listener objects and endpoint names. When Service Fabric then starts your instance, right, so it starts you running, you create the listeners and give it back to Service Fabric. Then later, Service Fabric wants to open your service and actually like start it going, right? It's a two-step thing. In that second step, it will then notify all your communication listeners that it wants to start your instance or replica. Then all your communication listeners at that time will say, okay, let me open this HTTP listener, let me open this TCP listener, let me open this UDP listener, and so on. At that point, your listeners are listening on the ports for traffic, and you return back to Service Fabric the endpoint at where each of those listeners is listening. Service Fabric then accumulates all the endpoint names and the endpoint values that you are returning back from each listener and sends it off to the naming service, which is a Service Fabric provided service that is running within your cluster. So now the naming service will know the names of your service's endpoints and the IP addresses for each of those, or the endpoint addresses for each of those. Then other services running within the cluster, they can go and query that information from the naming service, and then they can use that endpoint information to talk to the service directly with very high performance. Okay. Now, these endpoints are visible in Service Fabric Explorer, and very shortly I will show you a demo so you can see where that actually is. And that's useful for debugging and diagnostics. So now I've told you the three steps you have to do as a service in order to be listening for network requests that are coming in. Let's talk about what the client has to do. The clients, when they want to talk to a service, they have to query the Service Fabric naming service first and say, I'm looking for a service, and they give the service name, which will be fabric:/application name/service name, and they also specify which partition they want to talk to. Usually for stateless services, there's only one partition, but for stateful services, you may have many. And then the naming service will go and return the endpoint. At this point, the client would use standard communication mechanisms. So if you're using .NET, you could use an HTTP client or a TCP client or a UDP client class with this endpoint that you just got back from the naming service in order to communicate with the service that you wish to talk to. If that service moves for some reason, then the communication fails. So your code to do this communication has to be wrapped in a try-catch block and has to have a retry loop around it, where if there's failure occurs, you go back to the naming service to get the latest endpoint, and then you retry again. One thing you may want to consider, because this kind of network communication can be rather brittle, one thing you may want to consider is using queues. Queues is a much less brittle way of doing asynchronous communication between services and allows the services to scale a little bit better as well. So it's something to consider. At the bottom of the slide, I mentioned the various ways that Service Fabric provides for you to query the naming service. There's a REST API called Resolve Partition, where you're getting the endpoint for a particular partition. And then there's a PowerShell command called Resolve Service Fabric Service. And in the .NET world, there's a class called Service Partition Resolver. And there's another class which called Service Partition Client, which automatically adds the retry support in for you to make the a little bit easier coding for the .NET developer. For HTTP endpoints and HTTPS endpoints, we have a recommendation. You do not have to follow it, but it's a fairly strong recommendation. And if you do follow it, the reason for the recommendation is it's supposed to make diagnostics and testing easier for you. Again, because network communication is always brittle, doing something like what I'm about to talk about can increase your chances of success, or at least diagnosing a problem when it occurs. We recommend that when you are standing up an HTTP listener, that for the endpoint have the scheme here, which would either be HTTP or HTTPS, :// and then the node name or IP address of the node. That would be whatever the IP address is of the node that the service is running on, followed by a colon, and then the port number. And again, you can either statically specify a port in the service manifest file, or if you leave the port XML attribute off, then Service Fabric will dynamically assign you a port at runtime. And you can get that information from the context object that's passed in when your service instance .NET object is being created. After the port and another slash, we recommend that you put the partition ID next. This is a GUID that you can get from, well, it's passed in the context object, so when your code is running, you would pull it out of there, the partition ID, then another slash, and then an instance ID. Each instance or replica is assigned an ID value, which is a 64-bit integer. The partition IDs are always GUIDs. And so we recommend you put the instance ID here, and then another slash, and then this is really the most important part at the end, just some new GUID. The purpose of the new GUID is to guarantee uniqueness, so that as your service instance moves around the cluster, every time you are listening on a new endpoint, you would have some new unique value at the end of the deployment, at the end of the endpoint, and so there would be no conflict that's occurring. When you're talking to something, you know exactly what it is that you're talking to. And so that's the most important part. The recommendation for the partition ID and the instance ID, this is for diagnostic purposes. If you have a client service that's trying to use this endpoint and it's failing for some reason, you could maybe connect a debugger or look at some trace logs, and you could see what endpoint is trying to talk to. And then from the GUID for the partition ID, you could then say, so does this actually exist or doesn't it? Oh, it doesn't exist? Of course it doesn't work. So now, why did I get the wrong partition ID? Or it does exist? Well, then maybe it's the instance ID. So does this instance ID exist or doesn't it? And if it doesn't, then why does that instance ID not exist? How did I get the wrong value to go and do the communication? And so on. I give an example of what one of these URLs look like at the bottom of the slide, where you can see the IP address of 192.168.71 on port 80. And then here's a GUID for the partition ID. This is the 64-bit integer for the instance ID. And then some randomly new GUID shoved at the bottom. All right, so let's switch over now to Service Fabric Explorer. While you weren't looking, I went and deployed a stateless service type into my cluster over here. This is a service that I had created that actually does have a listener, and so it publishes an endpoint into the naming service. And I just wanted to show you this endpoint, which is being retrieved from the naming service within the cluster. So here's my type. I open it up, and here's my named application for that type. I open it up, and here's my named service, That name service has a partition in it that starts with 8C8D something, and then there's one instance of it running within that partition. And you'll notice that here in Service Fabric Explorer, there's this address section that has endpoints on it. And there's this service endpoint over here, and it was dynamically assigned the port of 34001. There's the 8C8D, which is matching this partition number as part of the endpoint. Then there's that the rest of the GUID, a slash. Then here's the instance ID, 13111, which matches the instance ID up here at the top. Then there's a slash, and then there's this other GUID, 6398 something or other, and that's the randomly generated GUID. It doesn't have a relationship to anything else. Just makes this endpoint be unique. All right, there's just one more thing I'd like to talk to you about before we end this section on stateless reliable services, and that is some additional Visual Studio tooling that we have for you. Here I am in Visual Studio looking at the Solution Explorer, and on my application project that's part of my solution, I can right-click here, and there's a package option on the context menu. This goes and will do the packaging. That is, creates a directory with the subdirectories and the code directories and copies all the .exe and .dll files for all the dependent service types in there and gets the whole thing packaged so that you could upload it into the Service Fabric image store. And then the other option we have is this publish. Publish does a package first, and then after the package is done, it will go and take the directory contents and it will go and publish it to some cluster endpoint. And that cluster endpoint can be local on your machine if you're using one box, or it can be to some endpoint in an Azure data center. Let me just click on publish and you can see what the dialog box looks like over here. You can choose which publish profile you wish to use, cloud, XML, or you could create some additional ones, which you may have for staging or testing or production and so on. There's various endpoints that connect to over here. And another thing I'd like to point out is the manifest versions. Earlier in this presentation, I talked about how you upgrade. Actually, in the previous section, I talked about how to do upgrades. And then upgrades require that you change the version numbers inside the XML files, and there's a bunch of different version numbers. To make your little life a little bit easier, we have this manifest versions button here, which displays this edit versions dialog box. This is really just walking over the XML files, and it's showing you for the service package what versions you currently have. And then I can say, well, this new version of the code is going to be version 1.0.1, and then when I hit tab, it will go and change all the version numbers throughout all the rest of the XML files. So it becomes a little bit less wieldy for you to update that. Now, this only works if you're using what we refer to as semantic versioning, where you're using this kind of numbering scheme. If for the version strings, you're using things like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or date times or timestamps or something, then of course this doesn't work and you will have to manually change things. But if you're using semantic versioning, then this little dialog box in Visual Studio can make your life a good bit easier. After you change the versions, you can then go and say publish, and then of course the package will be created and then it will be sent up. All right, on that note, I think we've now covered a lot of the core concepts of building reliable services, stateless ones that is, using the .NET programming models that Service Fabric provides. This is what's used a good chunk of the time. In the last part of this course, we will cover the stateful reliable services, which builds upon whatever everything that I've just shown you here.